Anarchopreneur, episode number 38. This one's all about why nobody's reading what you're writing. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism, God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
And we're back. Welcome back, Free Market Squad. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show, the only podcast dedicated to self-ownership and business ownership. I am your host with the Hero Complex, Nathan Fraser. You, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad, and today is Sunday, the 11th of September, 2016. Wow. 15 years from that historic date, 2001, September 11th, where quote unquote terrorists flew planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, apparently, and also magically were able to collapse Building 7. Crazy. We're going to talk about that a little bit today. We're also going to be talking about why nobody's reading what you're writing. This might be something that you feel like you're suffering from. It's not something that I typically suffer from. Occasionally, I swing and miss, but I usually get a pretty good response on the stuff that I write. And I'm going to share some of my secrets with you in the later part of the episode today. Before that, though, I'm going to give a huge shout out and thank you to all of the networks that pick up and make this programming, unprogramming possible. So first of all, huge thank you to Chris and Cherie Geo over at truthfrequencyradio.com for putting up with my shenanigans and letting me continue to put out my alternative to alternative media on their network. Also, Jules over at UCY.TV, thank you so much for picking up and rebroadcasting this here podcast. And last but not least, LRN.FM. I'd like to thank everybody over there that picks up this show and rebroadcasts it on their network, especially Ian Freeman. Huge thank you for everything that you guys do over there as well. And then, of course, if you want more of this here unprogramming, you can go over to NathanFraserShow.com and you can find the podcast there. You can find my blog there as well and dive deeper into the world of Nathan Fraser. So, like I said, today is September 11th, 2016, and we're going to be talking about 9/11, and we're going to be talking about conspiracy theory in general, and some overlap in that I see inside of the conspiracy theory realm and inside of the self-help guru realm, and even in the business help realm as well. We're going to be talking about some of that stuff. This is going to be a crazy episode. Let me tell you about it. So first of all, I'm going to start with my journey. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself and how I came to where I'm at. And then we're going to get into some critical thinking skills that you can apply to your experiences as you go through this journey as well. And so I'm just going to start with before 9/11. Probably 1997, 1998, I met a guy. I worked with this dude. His name was Haas. Well, his last name was Hostetler, so we called him Haas. And he would just constantly go on about how the government actually perpetrated the Oklahoma City bombing and how it wasn't actually Tim McVeigh and Terry Nichols. And he kept talking about John Doe number two. And he had just recently been released from prison, and he was under the impression that Jews ran everything, and he was very anti-Semitic. And so it was really hard for me to take anything that he took or that he espoused very seriously. But I did listen to him, and you know, I try to have an open mind about things. And one of the things that he constantly said is he said that there was going to be more terrorist attacks. He kept trying to get me to read this book by William Cooper called Behold a Pale Horse. He gave me the book. He's like, you need to read this. You need to read this. And I never did. Well, I mean, I eventually did, but at the time I didn't. But I did tune in to Bill Cooper's shortwave radio show. Haas actually had a couple of, I should say probably more than a couple of episodes of it recorded on tape. This was back when we still used tapes. He would be like, listen to this. And I would entertain it. And to be honest, there was a lot of things in there that kind of perked my ears and made me pay attention a little bit more than I was at the time. And the day that 9/11 happened, Haas was no longer working at the bar that we worked at together, but I was still working there. And the day that it happened, I remember watching the towers fall, especially Building 7. I remember when Building 7 fell, it was like mid-afternoon in our time zone. And I remember watching it and just being like, wait, why is that building falling? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And then like an immediate rush of everything that Haas had been saying over the last couple of years just hit me like a ton of bricks. And between that, the way that all three of those buildings just like collapsed in on their own footprints, the fact that it seemed like there was like almost a stand down order as far as shooting down those planes before they were able to hit their targets, the fact that the Pentagon, the most heavily surveilled building in the entire world, didn't have a single clip of footage showing a plane go into it. All of these things, like, just kind of, that day I was like, okay, maybe I should have taken what Haas said a little bit more seriously. And so I started digging, and me and my little brother, at the time we were doing rap music, and we just went full on conspiracy theory, like took a huge conspiracy theory tilt with the way that our music was going. And we both started just researching and digging and digging and digging. And let me tell you, we came across some very crazy stuff. Now, fast forward to just a few years back. I don't even remember what year it was. I think 2014, maybe. Sounds about right. I was really getting into entrepreneurship. My aunt had recently advised that I read The E-Myth by, I think, Michael Gerber, I think was the name of the guy that wrote that book. I was getting into that. I was a newbie in the world of entrepreneurship, and I started seeing a lot of overlap between the mindsets of newly minted conspiracy theorists and newly minted entrepreneurs, or at the time what I would consider myself a wantrepreneur. That means I wanted to be an entrepreneur. It's like a wannabe. you start diving down these rabbit holes and you start questioning everything you have ever known. And this is a very similar, I had the same feeling when I started trying to look into business management that I had as I was first starting looking into conspiracy theories. The same feelings, I was having the same feelings, the same uncertainty, the same kind of like detachment. And I'll kind of get into what I mean by that. So when, maybe not you and not particularly me, because when I first started delving into conspiracy theories, me and my little brother had a lot of influence over the group of people that we hung out with. We were kind of like the alpha males of the pack. So I didn't really suffer from this quite as bad as I see other people suffer from it. But I do see a lot of people, when they start delving into conspiracy theories, they lose connection with the old group of friends. And they start feeling like they can no longer relate with their old group of friends. They feel like they've outgrown their old group of friends. And I see a lot of people start to feel lonely, feel disconnected, and feel very uncertain about what's real and what's not real. And a lot of times I see people, and maybe even myself to an extent as well, once you kind of like lose the connection with the old tribe, you start looking for a new tribe to connect with. You start looking for new connections. And one of the things that just as human beings that we do is we look for tribes. We look for groups of people that we can relate with. And when we find those tribes, we alter ourselves to blend in better with those tribes. If you look at the way people dress and the music that they listen to, and the political ideologies that they have, we're very much a tribe species still to this day. And when you start like delving into conspiracy theories, it's very easy to no longer have a tribe and go out looking for a new tribe. And I see a lot of times as you study, and this is something that I also slightly suffered or experienced, I guess, as you're studying, you come across people who really seem to know their stuff. You come across these people who look like they're authorities. They've written books. They get booked on radio shows. They have underground videos. They've established a name for themselves in the research community. And I put research in quotes. And they say things that you feel. And they say it with authority, so it appeals to you, or at least it appealed to me. I still had that kind of guard up when coming across these type of people. But definitely the fact that they were confirming my suspicions, that they were saying, yes, you're not crazy for questioning this type of stuff, that definitely helped lower my guard when it came to certain thought leaders in the conspiracy theory realm. And a lot of times I see these thought leaders become like the replacement for the old pack. And so it seems like people go from feeling vulnerable and feeling without a tribe to feeling accepted again. They find somebody who accepts them. They find somebody who accepts their views and confirms their views. And they don't want to go back to feeling vulnerable again. So this is the catch. This is the hiccup in the whole situation. If these thought leaders / gurus, if they understand where you're at, if they understand the vulnerable situation, the mental state that you're in, they can take total advantage of it. And some of them do. I see a lot of times that the promise of like enlightenment or the promise of elitism, you have certain knowledge that other people don't have, is very alluring and can be like a hook that just pulls you in towards these people. And I see this also in like the self-help kind of realms as well. And also in like the business realms. I see these people that a lot of times we go through the same feelings. We go through those same feelings of disconnectedness. We don't, you know, we're starting a business and we can no longer relate with our friends. We can no longer, you know, we can't talk about the same things with them that used to interest us. Now the things that interest us are of no interest to them. And so we're looking for people that we can relate with. And there's a lot of people in the self-help realm and the business management realm who understand, just like some of these conspiracy theory gurus do, they understand how vulnerable you are. They understand the mindset that you're in. They understand that you're going to be quick to latch on to explanations and solutions and get rich quick schemes. And so they use that vulnerable position to sell you their book or sell you their program or whatever. Sell you their $999 course on how to make money while you sleep. So here's the deal. Most of these people are full of crap, and they know that you don't know enough yet to understand that they're full of crap. So they can sell you their bull crap. Some of them might actually be drinking their own Kool-Aid. Some of them might actually believe that the stuff that they say, but most of them are full of crap. And this is also in the conspiracy theory realm. Most of the main talking heads in the conspiracy theory, most of the people that have these books, most of the people that have radio shows like yours truly, most of us are, if at all, we're only one or two steps ahead of you. And so for you to look at us and be like, oh, this guy really knows what's going on and I can trust what this guy says, that's the wrong approach to take. Most conspiracy theories, it's very hard to prove one way or the other, especially with the amount of evidence that you're actually able to attain. How are you going to prove JFK one way or the other? It's almost impossible because the amount of evidence needed to prove it one way or the other is just not within your grasp. It's not. Sovereign citizens, this is a rabbit hole that I went down myself. You start coming across, I keep getting this, I had to delete this guy actually off of my Facebook because just recently I got friended by this dude and he kept sending me all these things about your, and to be fair, part of his argument or part of his, there was a grain of truth to what he was saying. The idea that money isn't real, the idea that it's not, all of our Federal Reserve notes are actually evidence of debt, that you can't pay off debt with notes of debt. That all makes sense to me. And then it gets into the gray area. Oh, these debt notes are actually printed off of this invisible or bank account that's tied to your straw man that you never know about, they never teach you about. I don't know. I have not seen enough evidence to prove that that might be the case, but there is some compelling arguments for it. So I'm not willing to just completely write off that whole belief. But then here's where it gets fishy. There's a lot of people out there that are like, oh yeah, you can just write your own bank notes, or you can become your own bank. You can become a private banker and you can just issue your own promissory notes. You can access that account for yourself. And when I first started getting into it, there was rumors of this thing called a black card. Apparently, if you pulled the right strings and pushed the right levers, you could get a black card, which was like a credit card attached to your account, to your $1 million Sestake trust account, where you could just spend money on it and spend and spend and spend and never have to worry about anything ever again. And the people that sell you these ideas, they promise to be able to teach you how to do this. I'll teach you how to access your Sestake Trust strawman bank account, and you'll never have to pay for anything ever again. I just need $20,000 from you, and I'll teach you. Don't worry, though. As soon as you learn how to do this, that $20,000 is just going to be a drop in the bucket. So, yeah, go ahead and send me those 20,000 Federal Reserve notes, and I'll send you this package on how to access your Sestake Trust bank account. And people fall for this. Like, seriously, if somebody knows how to access their Sestake Trust bank account and they don't have to worry about any kind of money whatsoever, and they can, they can teach you how to do the same thing, what do they need $20,000 or 20,000 Federal Reserve notes from you for? And yet I see this same scam hoisted on people. The most recent one, the one that this guy kept sending to me, was it was something like $15,000 would get you access into this community of people who know how to do this, and once you're part of this community, they'll teach you how to access your bank account. $15,000. What do these people need your $15,000 for? Seriously. And I see the same thing happen in the business realm or the entrepreneurial realm. There's this cat on YouTube, And I'm not going to say his name, but he does these videos. Hey, I'm just sitting in my garage here with my two fancy cars and my nice house. And some people asked me to do a tour of my house. So I'm going to take you on a tour of my house. And I'm going to tell you about how you can get rich and you can buy these cars for yourself. And you can have the house just like this. Knowledge. You got to get knowledge. You got to buy my 97-step course on how to get that knowledge. And the deal is this guy, when he first started making these videos, he didn't own those cars. He didn't own that house. But he was able to make a promise to people who were vulnerable, who didn't know enough to know better, and was able to actually get, like, able to actually make himself a lot of money off of selling a dream to people that were in a vulnerable situation. So I see this same thing happen both in the sovereign citizen movement, in the start your own business movement, and inside of the conspiracy theory movement as well, where people that are diving in, peeling back layers of an onion, don't know exactly who they can trust or what they can believe, are feeling disconnected from their old group of peers, and start latching on to thought leaders and not using enough critical thinking to sift through what those thought leaders are trying to hoist upon them. So back to conspiracy theories, where I started this entire rant. I'm going to say this. I do believe that the government and the media are absolutely lying about 9/11. I don't think that the official story is credible. There's more holes in it than a block of Swiss cheese. But most conspiracy theories I don't agree with. I think most conspiracy theories are crap. They're either started by idiots who just don't understand things. And so they, you know, it's like the old, it must be magic. If you took a cell phone back to the 1920s and showed it to somebody, they'd be like, it's magic, just because they don't understand how things work. And so their conclusion is, it's magic. It must be a conspiracy. I also think that a lot of conspiracy theories are actually started by COINTEL agents, people that in operations like Mockingbird and stuff like that. I think a lot of them are just started and pushed out there to see how many idiots will latch on to them and make the entire movement of people looking for truth look like a bunch of ignoramuses, which I understand is a conspiracy in itself. But I think 99% of conspiracy theories can only be held on to if the believer in that particular theory is ignorant or missing puzzle pieces. They're trying to paint a picture, they're missing giant amounts of puzzle pieces, and because they're missing those pieces, they're seeing the picture incorrectly. And a lot of them willfully, a lot of them don't want to look at evidence that would indicate that maybe there's not a conspiracy there, that maybe there is a logical explanation. Trust me when I say cognitive dissonance is just as much alive and well in the truth movement as it is anywhere else. I'm going to talk about for a second Mandela effect. This is like a hot topic right now, and I don't really buy into the Mandela effect because I see all of these, I study all this stuff, just like the flat earth. I studied it for 2 or 3 years before I wrote it off. Mandela effect, I've been studying it since the Berenstain Bears thing caught my attention almost a year ago, but a little bit more than a year ago, maybe. Lately, this whole argument of the continents are moving and the maps are moving, like, just as take a second and understand that maybe you don't know how maps are put together. Maybe you haven't looked into Mercator projection versus Gauss-Peters projection. maybe a little bit of studying will explain a whole lot, and you'll realize why maps aren't always drawn the same way. And just because you saw a map one way and then saw a map a different way doesn't mean that, just because there's two different artist renditions doesn't mean that the continents are actually moving. C-3PO in Star Wars, lately I've been seeing all these, oh, they've magically changed the leg color of C-3PO. Here's proof. He had a gold leg and now he has a silver leg. Okay. Back in the 70s, when they used to produce toys, the old Kenner toys still have gold legs. And the reason why is because it was cheaper to produce those toys that way. It's expensive to cast two different dyes of toys with two different colors. It's easier to use the same plastic injection, the same mold, and the same colors. Same thing, the old movie promo artwork. A lot of the old artwork still has C-3PO with the golden leg. It's not a conspiracy theory. I've done artwork for record labels and for businesses. Sometimes artists make mistakes. Sometimes artists are told one thing, and by the time the final production happens, changes have been made. But if you don't understand how toys are produced, if you don't understand how promotional artwork is produced, if you've never been in these fields and you've never dealt with the confusing orders that go on back and forth between production companies and content producers, it's really easy to point your fingers and say, oh, there's proof of a conspiracy, when it's actually not. And I see this happening all the time in the Mandela effect conversation that's going on right now. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this. I'm going to talk about the Animaniacs, and we'll see where the conversation goes from there. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. I'm obviously a New World Order shill, and we'll be right back on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
All right. Each week, I like to focus on one of the members of the Free Market Squad. And this week, I'm going to be focusing on David Lewis and his website, Mongenix.com. That's MONEGENIX.com. David helps people end their cash flow problems with insurance-based financial planning. He helps people plan for the future, helps them lower their tax bills, and helps them save money. His website has been featured in Life Health Pro, New Wire Investor, and Huffington Post, just to name a few. If you want to learn more about how David can help you with your cash flow problems, go check out his website at mongenix.com. That's MONEGENIX.com. Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life. And membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handycar's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. I am your host with the Hero Complex, Nathan Frazier. You are tuning in to this here podcast, probably through Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, or LRN.FM. A huge thank you to everybody that works to put those broadcasts out. Or maybe you're listening because you found my show over at NathanFrazierShow.com. Either way, thank you for giving me an hour of your time today. I'm going to jump right back into this. I was talking about the Mandela effect conversation that seems to be huge in the conspiracy theory movement right now. And one recent thing that I saw was an episode of Animaniacs that I remember as a kid. And the whole thing was, look at this frame, Australia is over here. But then over in this frame, Australia is over here. This is proof that somebody has moved Australia. Or if you're an artist like I am, it's proof that two different sets of artists weren't on the same page when they constructed the animation, which happens all the time. Producing animation is a tedious task. It takes a lot of people to make it happen, and sometimes people make mistakes. There's episodes of the old 1980s Ninja Turtles where one Ninja Turtle voice was going on and another Ninja Turtle was animated as speaking those words, where the people recording the audio were just not on the same page as the people producing the animation. These things happen. People make mistakes. When one set of animators draws a close-up of the map and they draw Australia in one position, and then another set of animators draws the frame where the map is further out, is zoomed out, and they draw in a slightly different position, that's because two sets of animators are working on it. Or it might even be the same animator. Sometimes when I draw comic books, in one scene I'll have the tattoo of a character higher up on their forearm than in the next panel, because artists make mistakes. It's not a freaking conspiracy. It's the fact that we're human beings and we're fallible, and artists make mistakes. People who make movies make mistakes. There's a very simple explanation for 90% of, I would probably say for 100% of every argument that I hear for the Mandela effect. And I know this is not popular. A lot of people are going to say, oh, you can't be saying, especially on some of the networks that I'm on, this is not the popular opinion to hold, but this is my opinion and I have to put it out there. This really is just bugging the crap out of me too. I keep seeing people post this, Simpsons predicted the Trump election. They show this news footage of Homer Simpson going down an escalator with Donald Trump. And then they show news footage from, I think, like Fox News or something, of Donald Trump in the exact same scene with, I believe, his wife, where Homer Simpson is replaced. And they're like, this is proof that the Simpsons knew, you know, time travel and blah, 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 except for the fact that it's not, because the news footage was recorded months before the Simpsons footage was compiled. They say, oh, this Simpsons predicted this way back in 2004, except for the news the cartoon footage that they're using as evidence was just released a year ago. So just do some freaking fact checking before you post stuff. And people want to believe. People want to believe this so bad that they'll just share this stuff without actually looking into it, without actually understanding what's going on. They share this stuff and they say, this is proof. And it's not. And it makes us all look like jackasses. And I'm sick and tired of being part of a community that is just more than willing to post idiotic crap and make us all look like jackasses. It really makes me not even want to have anything to do with most of you people. This is the deal with the Mandela effect. Human beings suck at remembering things. We're not good witnesses. There's witness testimony is almost never credible. I can't remember the name of this experiment, but they did this experiment like back in the 90s, where they faked a crime incident in a crowded area, and they had a guy come in and commit a robbery and then take off. And they video camera, they had, you know, hidden cameras everywhere, and they planted witnesses. And immediately after it happened, the witnesses would tell people, oh man, that guy in the white hat just robbed that lady. Did you see that? And the people that saw it, they saw that the guy did not have a hat on. And the video camera, the videotape, when played back, proved that the guy didn't have the hat on. But because they had planted witnesses there saying, did you just see that guy in the white hat rob that lady? And then when the police officers, the fake police officers, would show up on the scene to interview the witnesses, they would say, well, this witness over here said a guy in a white hat robbed that lady. Did you see that? And like 9 out of 10 people would say, yeah, there was this dude and he came in, he had a white hat. And if you're looking for him, he was a dude in a white hat. And all of them believed that they saw a man in a white hat. But then when they would play the footage back for the people, and they would see themselves on the video, and they would see the guy come in and do the fake robbery, and they could see with their own eyes that he did not have a white hat on, they would say, there's something wrong with the video. I clearly remember him having a white hat. People are vulnerable to suggestion. People's memory is not very, it's not on, you know, it's not on point all the time. That's why witness testimony is rarely admissible in a court of law. Or if anything, it's just, this is what the person believes that they saw. And when it comes to delving into these alternative conversations, you need to understand you're in a very vulnerable situation, and people can convince you of giant lies, and oftentimes will accept them as truth. And I see this happening with 99% of the whole Mandela effect conversation going on out there. It's just people that don't understand things or misremember things, and they're saying, this is proof that CERN is altering the timelines. And it's just like, no, it's not. Somebody told me the other day, I specifically remember 52 states. I know they're lying. And now they're saying there's only 50. Look at the freaking flag. The flag has always had, well, it had 13 stars, but in my entire lifetime, the flag has always had 50 stars. Mathematically, there's no way to line those stars up that way unless it's 50. When I was a kid, we had this song, 50 nifty United States from 13 original colonies. I remember my entire life, it's been 50 United States. But people are like, no, they changed it. It used to be 52. They changed it. This is just a new timeline. Anyways, when you start delving into these holes, these rabbit holes, peeling back these layers of the onion, it's really easy to be taken for a ride by people who pretend or presume or present themselves as having more information than you. This is true when it comes to alternative media. It's true when it comes to the legal realm of sovereign citizens. And it's true when it comes to the get-rich-quick entrepreneurial realm. Be open to new ideas. Like I said, I still remember Berenstain Bears as Berenstain Bears. I don't remember them as Berenstain Bears, but I might be wrong. My memory is fallible, just like yours is. Be open to new ideas, but be very careful as to what you accept as truth, especially because you don't have all of the puzzle pieces. And one tiny puzzle piece, one piece of knowledge can change your entire perspective. So in closing, I still think that they're lying about 9/11. And I still think that there's some credibility to some of the other conspiracy theories out there. But 99% of what consists of the conversation of the truth, quote unquote, community is garbage. And 99% of the main thought leaders in that community are charlatans. And that could also be applied to me. So just be careful of what you're consuming, and be careful that you don't just blindly accept the opinions of people on YouTube or people on radio shows just because they have some sort of sense of authority, just because they give you a feeling of community, just because they give you a replacement for the pack that you're now missing. Just be careful. That's all I'm saying. All right. I did not mean to let that rant go as long as it did. I'm going to skip Nathan Frazier Land this week because that just took up way too much time. And I'm going to jump right into the Free Market Squad segment of the show. So today I'm going to cover some writing tips for bloggers, for social media, and for advertisers. And the reason why is I see way too much horrible writing trying to convey a great message out there. I see people with these great messages, and the way that they try to put these messages across just is horrible. No offense. I see this meme get circulated all the time about, I post something about politics and it doesn't get any likes, but then I post something about a selfie, or I'm going out to the club tonight and everybody likes it and shares it. I really don't suffer that. I post stuff about politics all the time, and my political posts get shared like wildfire. My political posts usually get between 50 and 150 likes. When I post a blog post, they get up to 100 shares. I don't have the same results that most activists and most advertisers out there have. And it's probably because I'm a copywriter. I understand how to write effectively. It's not because I'm special. It's not because I'm better than anybody. It's just because I have studied how to effectively get your message across in writing. And I get a way better response than most people out there do. And so I want to go over some reasons today as to why you're not getting the response that you desire and how you can. So I'm going to go over a couple of different things that should help you get better responses, more shares, more likes on your Facebook posts, your blog posts, et cetera, et cetera. So first of all, probably the first thing is to understand where you're at and conform to those expectations. Whatever platform you're on, make sure that you're writing for that platform. So in emails, I try to keep my communications to under 400 words. In a Facebook post, it's way, way less than that. And in a sales letter, it could be way, way more than that. The fact is you don't serve a steak dinner to somebody when they go to McDonald's. You just confuse people and you dissolve their trust. If they're going to McDonald's, you serve them a Big Mac. I don't know why anybody would go to McDonald's, but you don't serve them a steak dinner. So you don't serve somebody a sales letter on a Facebook post. And I see so many people trying to do that. That being said, almost everything else that follows is about making your content easier for people to consume. People are busy. They're just looking for a reason to click the back button. In advertising, people don't want to buy, so they're just looking for a reason to click back. In regular, everyday, day-to-day life, people are busy. They don't want to waste their time reading some garbage post. So when somebody's reading your content, the very first reason that you give them to scroll past your post or to click back or to click close on your window, the very first reason that you've given somebody to do it, they're going to do it, and you've lost them. So unless you're writing just to kill your own time, you consciously need to think about how you're communicating your messages. The very biggest violation that I see from people, especially people who are consider themselves activists or truthers, is run-on sentences. I see these sentences that just go on and on and on and on, and here's a comma, here's a comma, here's a comma. Learn how to break up your sentences into complete thoughts. If I can't remember the beginning of your sentence by the time I reach the end, your point is going to be lost on me. And if you're trying to make a point, you're shooting yourself in the foot by trying to make it through extremely long run-on sentences. Make your sentences short, make them to the point. If you keep adding commas to your sentence, stop. Go back and figure out where you can break it up into individual complete thoughts, individual separate sentences with periods. If you can't even form a complete thought in a sentence, and it looks like five paragraphs of writing and the first two sentences can't even form a complete thought, I'm not going to waste my time reading the rest of what you wrote. So please break your sentences up and do not have giant run-on sentences. Same thing applies for paragraphs. Paragraphs should never be longer than four sentences each. And the reason why is because it turns into this giant block or this giant wall of text. Nobody wants to read a giant wall of text. Have you ever walked into a messy house and you had no idea where to start? That's what a wall of text feels like. For me and for most readers out there, we need it broken down. We need step-by-step, small bites to consume. So when I walk into a messy house, I need to be able to say, okay, I'm going to start with the dishes. Then I'm going to take out the trash. Then I'm going to vacuum the floor. Then I'm going to dust the TV. But if I just see the whole messy house at once and I can't break it down into small little chores, I'm just going to go play Xbox instead. Information overload causes analysis paralysis. There's the old saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Don't throw the whole elephant at me in one giant wall of text. Show me little bites that I can consume one at a time. Show me little paragraphs that I can consume one at a time. The next thing is, don't bury the lead. Don't make me read 15 paragraphs before you even get to your point, because you're going to lose me before I ever make it to your point. Put your lead right up front. Get to the point right away and then back it up with compelling arguments. If you grab me, if you make me curious and you make me want to read more, I'll keep reading. But if I'm reading three paragraphs in and I still have no idea where you're going, I'm going to assume that you have no idea where you're going either. And I'm not going to keep reading. So get to the point, offer evidence, and then close by repeating the point. In blogging or in content creation, we call this tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them, and then tell them what you told them. Also, I hear people, this is a huge conversation. Should if I'm trying to sell somebody on something, or if I'm trying to write a sales letter, should I use short copy or long copy? Should it be 500 words? Should it be 50 words? Should it be 1500 words? It should be exactly the amount of words you need to get the point across and not a single word past that. You don't want to be adding all kinds of extra words. You don't want to be adding all kinds of extra sentences. Be very short, be to the point, get your point across, and respect people's time. Sometimes I'll rewrite an update on Facebook or a comment three or four times before I finally hit post. I want to make sure that I'm as short and to the point as possible with my communications. Don't use $10 words. Don't use words with like three syllables or more. I mean, three syllables is okay. Syllable is a word with three syllables. But don't be using these big college level words, especially because the average reader out there doesn't even know most of these words. So they're not going to keep reading sentences that are filled with words that they don't even understand. A great app that I use is called the Hemingway app. It helps keep all of my sentences short, to the point, and make sure that I'm not using any kind of big $10 words. So Hemingway app is a great tool for helping keep your writing at a reading level. Also use contractions. Read through before you hit post on something, go back and read through it. And sometimes you'll see that it sounds awkward or it sounds a little bit robotic. You are not a robot. Do not type like one. Get what I did there? You're not a robot. Don't type like one. Don't say you are not a robot. Say you're not a robot. You wouldn't say you are not a robot in real life. You'd say you're not a robot. So when you're typing, don't spell out you are not. Spell out you're not. Makes it a lot easier to read. All right. So some of these are that I'm going to talk about now are more for bloggers, but the above rules still apply. And I'll kind of re-emphasize them as I go. So first of all, for a blogger, if you're somebody who writes blogs, who's trying to get your message out through blogs, your headlines, I see so many horrible headlines. Headlines need to grab attention and they need to talk to my personal interest. So, and also your headline needs to evoke curiosity or make a promise or both if you can. So examples of this would be like, if you're a man over 30, these big changes in the law might leave you in a world of hurt. I immediately appealed to personal interest in that, to self-interest. It grabs my attention. It lets me know you're talking directly to me because I am a man and I am over 30. And then it evokes curiosity. It says these new laws or these new big changes in the law might leave you in a world of hurt. I'm directly talking to you. I'm saying you in the headline. Also, you can just imply you. You don't actually have to say you or your. You can just imply it. A headline maybe like how to survive the upcoming economic collapse. That doesn't directly say you in the headline, but it still speaks directly to you. You know that I'm talking to you. Ben Settle says that headlines need to be short enough to grab attention, but long enough to cover the details. So let me know. Grab my attention. Let me know that you're talking directly to me and let me know what you're going to be talking about. But leave enough curiosity where I want to click it and read the rest. And then again, you want to get straight to the point. You don't want to bury the lead. Whatever you teased me with in the headline, get straight to it. The same rules as above or before apply. Make a statement and then expand on it, improve it, and then close. Keep your paragraphs, of course, this still applies. Keep your paragraphs short when creating blog posts. White space is great. Any white space in between paragraphs makes it easier for the eyes to consume. The same thing. If I am immediately hit with a wall of text, I'm clicking the back button. If you break it up into easy to consume chunks with a bunch of white space in between the paragraphs, makes it easier for my eyes to consume. It makes it easier for me to read through it. I'm more likely to read through it. Images, rules for images in blogs. Images should always contribute. They should always complement the writing. And I see a lot of times people just putting images in their blog posts just to put them there. Or sometimes I even see images that actually take away from the post or conflict with what's going on in the font and make it, you know, they're fighting against what's written. So this is my kind of rule for images. Always have an image at the top of your blog post, but be very sparingly, use images very sparingly throughout the post. Only use an image if it actually helps complement what's being written. These next ones are just kind of like formatting things to keep in mind when you format how your blog posts look. Sans serif, which means without the serif. Sans obviously means without. Serif are the little like cliffhanger type things on the bottoms and sides of letters. The little like loopy tag things that are attached to letters. You look up sans serif versus serif. You'll see what I'm talking about. But on a computer monitor where people have different resolutions, sans serif is the way to go. Letters with serif on them, like Times New Roman, become hard to read. The letters they blur together, they bleed together, depending on what kind of monitor you're looking at it at. Or looking at it on. So go with a font like Arial or just the standard default web browser font. Avoid like typewriter or Times New Roman style of letters when you're posting on blog posts. They look pretty, but they make it harder to read. And anything that you do that makes your blog post harder to read makes it less likely to get read. A lot of designers also want to make their fonts or their logos stand out. So they're like, well, we got to have something that stands out and grabs the attention. But again, if it's not easy to read, it's not going to get read. So avoid that. Also, avoid fonts where round letters get lost in each other. Letters like D, C, and O. I always test my fonts by typing DCO to see if the letters get lost. If they all look the same, that is a font that I'm not going to use because, again, it makes it hard to differentiate the letters. It makes it hard to read. And the harder something is to read, the less likely it is to get read. Lastly, avoid putting fonts or text on top of images. I see people do this all the time on their websites. It's so bad. I don't want to fight with an image to try and get what message you're trying to put out there. So don't put your fonts on top of images. All right. Main takeaway here is if you want people to read what you're writing, make it easy to read. This is universal. This applies to Facebook posts. This applies to your blog. If you want people to read what you're writing, make it easy for them to read. All right, I'm out of here. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Check out more at NathanFraserShow.com. Go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. I'll talk to you later. I'm out of here. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You like listening to podcasts, don't you? Have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own? If you're a hardcore podcast fan, you probably have, and you've probably got something great to share with the world. I'm Nathan Fraser, and I've created a free online podcasting course for people just like you. Pre-launch Secrets gives you the top 5 secrets you need to know in order to launch a successful podcast. You'll learn how to create the core concept of your podcast, how to build a solid audience, and how to consistently generate great content for that audience. These are the secrets the pros use when coming up with ideas for their podcasts. And after this course, you'll have them all at your disposal. The course is free. It's taught by me. Enroll today. Go to podcastblastoff.com/course. That's podcastblastoff.com/course. Podcast Blastoff, the future of podcasting.